If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, folks. How are you? Welcome along. This is Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. If you are joining us for the first time, thank you. Really appreciate it. We are a weekly podcast, sometimes twice weekly, as is the case this week, where we like to have a conversation about many things. It normally starts off with a little bit of a chat about the film or TV show, and then we dive into a bit more detail about music, be that the music used within the show or film, the music used to inspire that. So that's kind of the very basic framework of what we try to do with this podcast. But every week is a completely new conversation, unique to that person and what they're here to talk about. We're very grateful for everybody who helps us facilitate our great guests, be that the PR agencies, the personal PRs, the film companies, the individuals. Sometimes I just reach out to people on Instagram. Yeah, that happens too. So thank you in advance. In fact, I'm really excited and fingers crossed that I'm going to be able to talk about 28 years later in the coming weeks with the wonderful Danny Boyle. And I'm sure that some of you will be aware that Young Fathers have done the score for the film. And that's a relationship that kind of started on Trainspotting 2 when Danny kind of came across them as he was in, I think, prep for the film and just sort of fell in love with them. So used some of their music in that, and that relationship has developed and continued since then. So I'm really excited to see what they've done with the music and also how they've worked with Danny on this. I was lucky enough that I bumped into Ali from the band last week at the Ivor Novello Awards, where he was presenting an award, as was I, to Rafferty, actually, who won for his original score for The Substance. As I was there, I said, I'm so excited to Ali. So excited about what you've done with Danny Boyle. Please come and do the podcast. And he's like, aye, no problem, pal. So I'm going to hold him to that, hopefully with all of Young Fathers. But that is very much in the future, in the coming weeks. So stay with me, bear with me. Hopefully we can make that happen. But our latest guest on Soundtracking is the fantastic Shannon Murphy, who directed a wonderful feature film called Baby Teeth that we had her on to talk about a while ago now. Also, she's worked on TV shows like Killing Eve, Dope Girls, to name but a few. But Shannon joins me this time to discuss her show Down for Sex, which you can watch right now on Disney Plus, based on a true story. Down for Sex stars Michelle Williams as Molly, a woman diagnosed with terminal cancer who leaves her husband in search of an orgasm. It's that simple. I love this. I just thought it was funny. It was sad, heartwarming, very honest. And I really loved seeing Michelle Williams in a very different role than we're used to seeing her in. Down for Sex is scored by Ariel Marx. And so we're going to begin with her cue, Sex Quest. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, 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 boom Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. Really good. Actually, I wanted to start by singing at you, orgasms with another person.
Yep, it's a pretty good one. It's a pretty memorable line, that one. Yeah.
I thought that was a great place to start our chat today. Oh man, this show's a gift. Congratulations, Shannon. It really is.
Good. I'm so glad you liked it. It was a lot of fun to make, I'm not gonna lie.
I
Yeah.
bet. I get it's just that it just feels like you're kind of almost listening in on conversations that you've almost had in your own head that you've been scared to have out loud.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's that secret world that so many of us have been dabbling in over the last few years of dating apps and the kink culture and the sort of, letting all that come to fruition in this series.
This kind of started off as a podcast series, is that right?
Yeah, it's based on a true story about Molly Cochran, who passed away and made a podcast with her best friend, Nikki Boyer, because they were both actresses and very funny people and really wanted to explore the honesty of going through this process and yeah, all the trials and tribulations, but also just the humor and the reality of how it felt for them and, a true love letter to female friendship. So, yeah.
It almost feels as well that there could almost be a number of versions of this in different locations in the world. It's not unique to the location of it being New York. Do you know what I mean? It feels like that it's kind of, there are Mollies all over the world, in every city and probably small town. I feel like it's got such a universal appeal, I think, to the story and the characters.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, most people at some point in their life have a really close friendship with someone who, they would be really devastated to lose just as much as a family member. So, sort of playing out that in your mind as, these actors were either performing this or all of us thinking about it, making it was, quite harrowing at times for sure.
You needed someone really special to play this role to kind of give us the depth of that experience. This is, it's very funny. It's very kind of honest and candid, but it's also really emotional, in terms of, with the reality of what she's been through and going through. Talk a little bit about Michelle and working with her to bring this kind of the reality of this character to life, make it feel so believable.
Yeah, I mean, she's just one of those actresses that directors dream of working with. She's kind of the reason I love what I do. Performances like Blue Valentine or Manchester by the Sea are just, extraordinary models of craft to hold up to any actor. So the idea of doing something with her that was a comedy and also quite a physical comedy and goofy in many ways in terms of its tone of humor sometimes was really exciting with Michelle because we don't get to see her do that much. She's, often picked for more serious roles with less light, I would say, than the comedic tone of this piece. But she is a very physical performer, which I love. And so we really did access a lot of the performance physically. But also, she's a big researcher and very detailed. And she comes with a beautiful little book to set where she's written so many notes. And any moment she feels like she's getting stuck, she kind of goes and looks at that. Yeah, and then it's interesting because it's like her strengths are more drama and Jenny Slate's strengths are more comedy. And so for both of them, it was like having to just, very gently massage more of the other skill set that they don't get to use as much, even though obviously they are capable of performing in that way, but sort of balancing the two to pull out that strength of theirs.
And I saw Michelle on, I can't remember what chat show was. It was the most brilliant conversation where she was talking about, I've never had to give a blowjob on camera before.
Yeah, and how she suck a thumb to do it. It's always those moments where you're like, yeah, how do we kick Rob Delaney in the dick while he's holding a plant and have, and the amount of times we talked about cock cages and butt plugs, never in my life did I think, yeah, it's an absolute joy. My job is like constant research. And even when I think I'm quite progressive and then I'm like, no, I do not know how that works. Do tell me more.
Delete history on computer immediately.
So shocking, honestly. Yeah. I better never commit murder because it's very scary what you'll find on my laptop.
That's kind of like, having a great kind of team of players, on board sort of thing, of kind of everybody losing their inhibitions and kind of being completely free and available, kind of tongue in their cheek kind of thing, way of kind of getting into something like this. You kind of need that, don't you?
100%. And you know, these are the kind of actors that would always offer more. You know, Rob Delaney would be like, when I run in the corner, should I also pull my pants down? I'm like, yes, 100%. You know, so, and they know that I'm always fearless with offers too, because I'm always like, have we gone too far? No, I'm sure we haven't. So no, I love that they would just keep making these kind of wild and brilliant offers. And see, sometimes we were weeping on set, me and Kim Rosenstock and Liz Merriweather, the showrunners. I've never laughed loud on set to the point where I knew they'd have to pull my laughter out of the sound recording later on. I was like, that is embarrassing, but I could not keep it in.
A joy to go to work every day.
Yeah, and I mean, we had that in the last episode. There's this crazy sequence, which is the unlinking, which was something that I didn't know happened in Death, where elements start to pop off the walls and time becomes, you know, a circle. And we did it, you know, like a theater production, and had all these puppeteers on butt dollies running around the room, and the bed spinning, and all the crew diving and hiding, and JD Plus jumping out from behind a curtain with a confetti cannon. It was madness, but so much fun. But you know, it's days like that where, again, you know, you're on a loudspeaker going, penis fly towards Michelle and turn to the left, and you're just like, what
Oh my God, I love it. The
am I doing?
music's great in it as well. It's so brilliant. Ariel Marx, I'm such a fan, in terms of just her, her full kind of package and what she does. I'd love to hear the conversations that you had with her about what you were looking for. But I love how there are almost moments where when she's kind of navigating this unknown journey that she's going on about what does she do? Does she go? Does she do that? Does she go on YouTube? All these kind of, it's almost got a kind of almost like computer game sort of slight element to it of kind of like she's almost playing a, she's on a handheld device.
That's such a brilliant way to describe it, because something that I always struggle with music in television is, you know, and just any cinematic form really, is I don't like manipulative music. And Ariel was totally on board with that. Also, anything that's a bit too stingy or like a repetitive theme that feels, I don't know, overused. So she took all those sort of notes, and really she felt the same way. And so we tried to steer away from that, so that in many ways it's usually the writing and the performance that are guiding you more than the music. And the music is just really sitting there to kind of hold the right space that it needs to be, but it's never doing exactly what the other elements are doing, which is great.
Did you have any kind of not sort of reference points, but kind of like clear kind of like, because it's also as well as those kind of things that you want, like you talking about that idea of the things that you don't want.
I think really, it's for me, it's often more about pulling things out, you know, and a word that either showrunners will say this, like that they hate hearing come out of my mouth. It doesn't come out much, but when I say cheesy, everyone ducks and they're like, no, whoa, why did you say that? And now they can't stop thinking about it. So I'm always just eliminating that. Or if I'm like, I've seen that or heard that before, or oh, that's exactly how you'd expect it to go, isn't as interesting, then it's great. Everyone kind of does a 360 and finds another way to do it. But I have to say, Ariel's work is always not really hitting that usual commercial territory, which I love. And I think it's important because we're so used to it, and then the audience is just not doing any thinking for themselves.
And the decision about whether or not you have needle drops within the context of the show, but I love how you use, you've got that track at the end of every episode. I think it was Big Thief, Vampire Empire, the first episode and stuff. So what's the kind of journey to that? It almost gives us as an audience the kind of chance to just take a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I always really believe in sort of a coda at the end of work, in that sense, to let you sit in it and have your own headspace. And Liz Merriweather is, incredibly well versed in music, as is Kim. And, for me, that first episode, it did need to have something in particular that really made your kind of heart sore with those two women, not knowing what their journey was going to be, but just knowing that they'd made the decision that they were going to, like, Molly was going to die with Nikki. And, like I kept thinking of sort of Amy Mann's Save Me and Magnolia and sort of these like really epic, beautiful female vocals that were so, are so powerful. And we kept kind of finding different sort of songs that sounded a bit in that territory. And then, of course, we landed on the vampire one. Watching TV tired, bleeding on the bed. And milk has just expired, all the leaves are dead. I'm not quiet, you've been quiet, just receiving what you said. Reeling, feeding, feeling filled by everything you fed. I see you as you see yourself through all the books you read. Overwhelmed with guilt and realizing the disease. You give me chills, I've had it with the drills. I'm nothing, you are nothing, we are nothing with the pills. I'm empty till she fills, alive until she kills. And her vampire, empire, I But you're right, it's to sit in the moment and not just rush and change channel onto something else. It's to really reflect, and so that the work kind of gets deeper into your bones than just a moment of entertainment.
Two things. I weirdly rewatched Magnolia last week, and I'd kind of hadn't watched it in ages. And God, so still, I mean, it's just, it's
I need to
so.
watch it again. I love it so much.
Oh, yeah, it was such a treat to kind of to rewatch it. It really, really was. This is a really odd question, right? But you know how much I loved Baby Teeth. I just it's it was such a beautiful film, and my God, the performances in that were extraordinary. I kind of love how honest in both this and that your conversations with someone dealing with cancer is dealt with. How kind of just how open both of those are, really, in a way. And I just think it's something that's quite unique, in terms of both on screen, particularly in terms of how people deal or are dealing very different stories, but how honest elements there are in both those kind of projects.
I mean, I think I'm quite obsessed with death and was as a child. I remember crying constantly, worrying that my parents were going to die or thinking about friends dying. I remember the first funeral I ever went to, I laminated the program of it was a daughter of a friend of the family's, and I kept it in my pocket for like 2 years. Like, I was quite obsessed with what is death? What is, how do people cope with it? Because it did feel like then and still very much now, something that happened and people sort of dealt with very quickly and it sort of was hidden away. And I always felt like it was something I couldn't understand the process of very well. And so I guess as I got older, I started reading a lot of books about the industry of death and why and how we deal with it the way that we do in a modern world. And I started wondering why we're doing that. And so I think I am drawn to stories where people are much more open about talking about it and dealing with it head on and trying to learn how all of us can behave in a way in our real life, the way that people do towards the end of their life, but why aren't we doing it now? It's
Yes. Why are we waiting?
exactly. And it's the most raw and honest version of people. And also, obviously, as a person who deals with story and drama, like the stakes don't really get any higher. So I guess I'm really drawn to that. And also how strangely people behave in desperate situations is something that I find really interesting. I mean, I never would have thought I would have done another project about cancer. In fact, when they first explained what the story was to me, I was like, don't be ridiculous. And then I read the script and I was like, yes, I am. That is a brilliant piece of text.
What was it about that script then that really kind of like pushed you over that, away from that initial thought?
I think, I knew that I'd achieved an interesting mix of tone in Baby Teeth, and I knew that this had a similar comedic and dramatic kind of balance to it, but it didn't feel the same. I would describe Dying for Sex as bleak humor. You know, there's something sort of really dry, and you know, Liz and Kim are very good at writing amazing one-liners that are just hysterical. But then how do you go from that to pulling it back into something that is tasteful and where you can really honor what's also going on? And I thought, oh, that's going to be challenging because it could go really pear-shaped. So I think that's what drew me to it. I wasn't 100% sure how I was going to be able to pull it off.
I did a podcast at the end, I think it was either the end of last year, beginning of this year, weirdly, with Marie Curie, called Songs to Die To. And it was the most amazing opportunity to sit and speak with nurses who work for Marie Curie about their experiences of encouraging music to be part of people's world as they're, in palliative care and all that kind of thing. Someone was like, oh my God, that must have been depressing. Like, so actually, it wasn't. It was incredibly uplifting and kind of really made me kind of adjust kind of thought process around a lot of things as well. It was so enlightening. I felt really kind of proud that it was like a conversation that was out there about, because it is that thing where we kind of go, oh, you don't really talk about death, and particularly if someone's kind of ill, it's like, oh, we don't talk about it. It's like, well, why not?
That's so funny you say that because I did a Marie Curie advert.
Did you?
Yeah, and we actually had beautiful music on there as well. But what was really fascinating was we shot in one of the Marie Curie hospices, and we had all real nurses, palliative care nurses, in the advert. And I remember on the day that we were shooting, there was a man who was wheeled out into the backyard, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and he was dying. It was his last few hours. And I remember seeing this image, and there was a flower that had been placed by his bed. Oh, gonna get teary. And his partner was holding his hand. But then there was a moment of comedy, which was that the kid sitting next to him was on his phone. And I was like, that's hilarious. But I looked down and I went, oh, this image is amazing. I want to recreate it. But I was like, I don't really have much time. I'm shooting this advert in like 2 days. And I thought, if he dies quite quickly, I can recreate this scene. I'm obviously not going to wheel out an actor next to him while he's passing away, but
Yeah.
he did actually die quite quickly. And then I felt so compelled to recreate an image that is really what they
Yeah.
do so beautifully. And we did, and it made the edit, and it's a beautiful moment. I did remove the kid on the iPhone, but in my, in the
Yeah.
TV version or film version,
Yeah.
he'd be on there. But it was really powerful, and they're an amazing organization.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. I had my dad was down visiting last week, actually. It was so funny. And he was just sitting in the kitchen reading the paper with music on. And this track came on, and I was just making a cup of tea. And he's like, oh, this is one I want played, by the way, when I'm wheeled out. And then the two of us just were like singing along at this Kenny Rogers track. It was brilliant. It was just like, it's like, oh, that's the kind of conversations that are good and healthy and kind of, it's like, yeah, it was crazy.
And my 9-year-old, actually, I actually said this to her 2 days ago. One of her favorite lullaby songs as a kid was Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. And even though we could put that in the cheesy camp, but I said to her, like, when I die, that can be my funeral song. You know, I just love that we always used to sing it together. I do think you have to have those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I love seeing, watching you from afar, on not like in a stalker way on social media, but like how music clearly is very important in your life, whether you're at gigs and that kind of thing as well. Do you obviously as a fan and stuff, but do you take inspiration from kind of that? I mean, there's nothing better, I think, than live music and the kind of way it can transport you and make you feel sort of thing. Is it a real inspiration to you?
Massively, I love going to gigs. My editor that I work with almost exclusively, Stephen Evans, when he's in London, he's out at a different gig every night, constantly inspiring me with new artists. We often go to WOMAD to kind of get more of sort of international artists that we haven't heard of. I mean, I'm seeing Beirut in a week or two.
Oh,
Like, I love
amazing.
them, No, I think there's something really special. And we often talk about also taking, we love using live recordings. And things that are a little bit messier in terms of how they sound. So no, we really like to see stuff live.
Were there any particular either filmmakers or films that were kind of an inspiration to you in terms of specifically how they used music, or also how they didn't? Because I think that's an equally important decision as to where you don't use music as to where you do use it.
Okay, well, but for not using music, I would say Michael Haneke's work a lot of the time I find so bold and compelling because often he doesn't have a lot. And then when he does, it's an incredibly bold choice. I mean, when I was, you know, young and first ever heard a soundtrack that blew my mind, it was Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, for sure. I mean, I put that on again the other day and I was like, wow, I know every single word, having all the feels of being a teenager all over again. Yeah, and I always did say to myself, gosh, it's great when you make work if you can have an absolutely banging soundtrack like that. Like The Brutalist recently was, you know, composition that I really loved because of all the creakiness and the authenticity of how it was recorded. You know, I'm very strong about that when it comes to also like audio on set. I don't like doing ADR. I will have the sound department clean everything so carefully before we have to re-record a line. I like all the weird mic pops and things like that. I don't mind them. And I felt like The Brutalist soundtrack really made you more in the moment because it was so honest and raw and authentic. And it's like a documentary that I really admired that kind of work.
Even the intermission, I didn't want to go to the toilet because I was so intrigued by the intermission, the music, and it was like incredible. Where did I see you last? Because I was trying to remember this morning. What did we bump into each other at?
We were at Abbey Road.
Yes, that's right.
And you'd actually just interviewed a really...
Daniel Pemberton.
Yes, and his talk was so fascinating.
He's mental and brilliant and he's like an Einstein. He's crazy.
I know, I tried to like fan out to him, but I could tell... awkward. I'm not great at that stuff. And he was like, yeah, cool. And but no, I thought, you know, the way he spoke about creating music was really, really brilliant.
It's crazy how he can have maybe six different scores on the go at one time. I just don't know how that works in terms of compartmentalizing his brain in a way of kind of them not fusing between each other. It's crazy.
It's really fun when you work with composers who haven't composed for Scream before. Like this project I did just before Dying for Sex, Dope Girls, Warren Ellis. Yeah. You're gonna do it, and then his schedule was so mental I was like no. But even though he's an absolute legend, but then I went to see a concert and an all-female drone choir called Nyx were playing beforehand. Oh, and wow. I watched them and I was like, oh my god, their sound is unlike anything I've heard before. And so I said, you know, would you like to do the music for Dope Girls? And they'd never done screen composition before, which is always my favorite in many ways, because then they're not just composing to picture all the time and sort of going more with a mood, and they're more out of the box in how they think of music. And that collaboration was extraordinary. I feel like they're gonna be doing that for a long time now.
That's amazing as well, just in terms of where Dope Girls, the setting of it. That's really exciting that was something that you leaned into then with them in terms of, yeah, because it's such a visceral production. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, I love that sort of the aesthetic of it, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what's got Polly's denim's really punk energy of her writing. And so I wanted all the elements to match that and kind of also be sort of raging at you in a way.
Do you know what's next yet?
I don't. It's gonna be a film that I know. So I'm just waiting to see which one gets greenlit first.
Yeah, that's a good position to be in. Which one first? That's awesome.
So we'll see, but I love television so much, but I do want to make another film now. Obviously, your baby teeth was a dream, but I need to make a second one.
So great to see how those young actors have gone on as well. A little bit proud of that as
Totally. I mean, Toby's doing Euphoria season three, which is like just perfect for him. So yeah, and getting to work with
Wow.
her again on Dope Girls was so wonderful. Nothing she can't do. She's such a chameleon. So, no, I'm so proud of them, and I'm still, incredibly close to them both.
He was I thought he was a real scene stealer as well in Bike Riders.
100%.
Yeah, that was phenomenal as well. Well, listen, huge congratulations and thank you for this show as well. I think it's kind of, I feel like it's almost one that could, should be kind of part of some kind of female syllabus in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Love
And
that.
on so many levels, really. You know, obviously someone going through an awful situation, but just what the show, the gift that the show gives, like all that stuff we were just talking about why wait until that moment? It's kind of just enjoy your life and do the things that are there and you want, and maybe you don't even realize that you want to do them yet, but kind of explore the dreams, the passions, the unspoken.
Yeah, and also women are standing up for themselves more in the sexual sphere. Like,
Yes.
speak up, ask for what you want. Guys don't have a trouble doing it. So like, why not? And also it's a turn on for both people. So like, don't censor yourself anymore. I know I've done it. It's just like, why do we do that? It's ridiculous. And so yeah, hopefully, I actually a girlfriend of mine said, "Oh, I just watched your show and I ordered a guy over for sex tonight." And I was like, what do you mean you ordered him? She was like, on the apps. So I was like, yeah, okay. But I was like, oh, good for you, whatever. If it's making people be bolder and doing what they actually genuinely want to do, that's good news.
Uber sex. It just reminded me of that brilliant cab scene in the second episode as well, and just the laugh. It's Michelle Molly's laugh afterwards is just so brilliant, because it's not condescending in any way. It's so clever, so on the money. It's
Yeah, and
brilliant.
also, you just imagine the crew rocking up every day and they're like, what are we doing today? My God, it's never ending hilariousness. Yeah.
Oh,
It's based on a true story, so there you go.
yeah. Shannon, a true treat to chat to you again, and I really look forward to what's next, and we get a chance to chat again. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, absolute pleasure, as always.
Oh, take care. Lots of love. Bye. From the score to Down for Sex, that's a sign from the universe, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrack and with the wonderful Shannon Murphy.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My huge thanks to Shannon for taking the time to talk to us. As I mentioned, Down for Sex is available to watch right now on Disney+. Shannon mentioned Daniel Pemberton during our chat, and you can hear my conversation with him, my various conversations with Daniel, at edithbowman.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Our YouTube channel is called Soundtrack and Extra, and we've got loads of extra content up there if you fancy diving in. Something that I'm going to put up there in the next couple of weeks is a conversation that I had with Michael Patrick King. Now, Michael Patrick King has been responsible for pretty much all of Sex and the City since it began, and then moving into And Just Like That. So we had a really lovely conversation about the show, the characters, and that kind of transition from Sex and the City to And Just Like That. Music, loads of great things, including a little cameo that he had as well in the show. So that's going to be an exclusive up on our YouTube channel, so please do go and dig that out. Next up, I am really thrilled to be able to celebrate a fantastic film called The Ballad of Wallace Island that is going to be in cinemas as of you guys listening to this right now. So get yourself along and watch the Ballad of Wallace Island, and then join me on Monday, where I will be chatting to Tim Key and Tom Basden. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.